I show up back to work the day after my AC breaks, right? Because the guy gets there at like 7:15 in the morning and has it fixed by 7:30 because it was that kind of thing. But it was, you know, the 12 hours between that period overnight where we're like, this is not going to happen.
Sure.
So we had gotten a hotel and we had had a slightly more restful night of sleeping in the same room with an infant and a toddler and the two of us, you know, trying to do that. And so I come in.
There's no good answer.
There's no good answer. But the AC is working at the house. I come back into work. I'm talking to Rick. And after 5 minutes of sitting in my, you know, my frigid office, I walk back out and I say, Rick, forget this. Next time my AC breaks, I'm not going to a hotel. I'm just sleeping in my office. Get some blankets. I'm good to go.
Sure. A lot of blankets. I've been in your office many, many times. It's very cold.
It's lovely. Mm. Yeah. It's like my own little refrigerator.
I can see the frost here on the Zoom call all around you.
That's just from my cold heart.
Yeah. All right, well, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And our co-host, Elise, guest co-host. Elise, I don't know. You know, she's been with us the last 3 weeks.
Yeah,
she's
guest
not
co-host.
With us today because she is on vacation.
Who knew that guest co-hosts get vacation? The original co-hosts don't get vacation. What is this?
That's true. That's true.
We got to get better agents. We got to relook at our contract for this.
Yes. Yeah, I believe that they're in Hilton Head. What is that? South Carolina, North Carolina? South Carolina.
It's Carolina. Hilton Head, South Carolina. Hilton Head, South Carolina.
It's on the beach. I can tell you that.
That sounds right. It is a beach. Yep.
A beach. So, yeah, her and her family are there.
Do we want to give out their street address so everybody knows where to go and, you know, raid things because people are gone? Do we want to do that?
Sure. Yeah, you bet. Here's their address if you need some AC.
Here's their travel plans. You can...
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think by the time this comes out, at least one of them will be back, her or husband. I don't know.
I'm still not going to recommend that people, like, go past their house while they're gone. That's
go hang
like
out.
A poor life choice.
That's probably. All right. So, schools are opening here in Texas, or not opening, but we're talking about opening.
Yeah.
This is part of the national
It's the time of year when kids are going to class.
If you're on social media, you know people are on social media talking about schools opening. So we're going to talk a little about that in a bit. But first, I have some news.
All right. News stories.
News stories. Yeah. Let me ask you a question, Pastor David. Are you a fan of the Discovery Channel?
I have not watched the Discovery Channel actively for some time because we got rid of cable, but
sure.
I do like a lot of programs. That,
like the idea, you like the idea.
I like the idea, and I like a lot of programs that are like I used to watch MythBusters and Dirty Jobs was a good one that we used to watch in college. And didn't Discovery Channel do like the Planet Earth series? Was that Discovery Channel that did those?
It sounds. I think that's BBC actually that did the Planet Earth series, but they. Well, I mean, I'm sure they did. Their own version of the Planet Earth series. Or
I like
know,
the idea of other people being out in the wilderness and letting me do that from my couch. I like that. That's a good idea.
We are also, we do have cable, but we're going to cut the cord this week, I think.
It is not as easy to do as I would like. We actually still have like the most basic package because they were going to triple our price for our internet if we cut out our cable. Like, well,
that's what it's out. That's what I'm looking at too. Like for some reason, it's cheaper to give me cable when I don't want it. So I haven't watched a lot of Discovery Channel, but probably it's most famous for Shark Week.
I had some friends in my college days who were big Shark Week fans. Yeah.
Sure. Well, Shark Week is coming up, and this year, August 9th, that's when Shark Week starts. They have a new show. Here's a headline here for you.
All right.
Mike Tyson to fight a great white shark as part of Shark Week for the Discovery Channel.
Excellent.
Tyson versus Jaws, Rumble on the Reef.
Yeah, that's going to go really well for for everybody involved. That's going to be a good thing.
Okay, what in the world, right? Like, how is he going to punch a shark in the face? Like,
I mean, I will say, I've been told that if you're getting attacked by a shark, you need to hit it in the nose because its nose is like super sensitive. So
I think I saw that on MythBusters. You know,
I can't verify that information, but I have heard that you're supposed to punch a shark in its nose. So, and it's not like the shark can stop you from punching it in its nose. Like
it doesn't have
arms to.
It doesn't have gloves. You know, he can't get his gloves up. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be kind of adorable if they both like had those old timey boxer headgear things on? Like they put that, you know, the thing with the strap around the great white.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't understand how they're expecting the shark to box. Is the boxing or wrestling match? All the shark can do is bite you. There's no biting unless Evander Holyfield. Didn't he bite somebody? Or is
Mike Tyson bit
Evander Holyfield. That's it.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Match made in heaven. A biter against a biter. There we go.
Right, so here's the show description here for you. With famed ring announcer Michael Buffer calling the shots, that's the Let's Get Ready to Rumble guy.
I just assumed, because what other famed announcer would there be?
You bet. Yeah. These two heavyweights will square off underwater, where Mike Tyson will try to score a TKO over the massive shark, all in the name of research. It's science.
Number one.
This is science.
What research are we accomplishing by this? Number two, how do we determine a TK? Like, is Tyson going to be in a cage? And he's, like, punching the shark through the cage? Is like,
there are
a lot of unanswered questions here that are almost enough to make me want to tune into this. Almost.
I think that's probably the most intent, right? They want to make you watch. Like, it's just to okay, how is this going to work? How is Mike Tyson going to fight a shark? Because I'm intrigued.
Yeah. This is like when that, what's it called when you walk across, a tightrope walker, right? This is when that tightrope walker guy was going to, like, go across the Grand Canyon. And we got, like, all hyped up and excited about it. And then as we watched it, it was like, oh, well, it's not really the Grand Canyon. It's this canyon next to the Grand Canyon. And, oh, he's actually, like, connected to this thing. So even if he falls, he's not going to, like, plummet to his death. He's just going to be dangling there until a rescue team can get to them. And they're all, like, standing by. And I was like, this is completely anticlimactic.
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
And it was still cool. I mean, I couldn't do it. It's fine. You need this great thing. But it's like, yeah.
I will say, this also will be anticlimactic. Yeah. You're not going to see Tyson punch a shark in the face, or the shark, like, grab his arm and rip it off. Those things are not happening.
Neither of those things are going to happen. Well, it's going to be like Tyson punching a robotic shark to, like, see how the robot shark would react. Mm. That's what it's going to be.
I think so. Or, yeah.
Maybe he's actually punching Jaws, like the robot shark from Jaws. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, I could see that. Here we go. I equate this with overcoming my fear of getting back into the ring at 54 years old, he explained.
This is Tyson saying this?
This is not the shark. This is Tyson.
Good.
Yes. And then here's this last quote. I learned from this experience during Shark Week that whatever intimidates me, I'm still able to step up to the challenge of and overcoming anything that would prevent me from accomplishing my life's mission of reaching my highest potential in life and bringing me closer to God. See, science, religion,
you know,
all combined in a man fighting a shark.
I've had a pretty long relationship with trying to get closer to God. That's kind of, you know, my business. And I've never thought to myself, you know what I think would really bring me closer to God? You know what I think would really be helpful? Fighting a shark. That's it. If I fought a shark, then I would really know God. I would really have the experience.
I certainly will say I am not ready to step into the heavyweight bout against a great white. You know, I'm gonna need to start at the lower level. Let me fight like a nurse shark or something. You know, like that's really where I'm gonna start getting closer to God. But I'm gonna build up to that. You know, nurse shark, maybe then a hammerhead, then
hammerheads
a bull
are
shark.
Surprisingly vicious, man. I'd back off that hammerhead. Bump him up a few ranks.
What about the little ones that are in, like, the touch cages at the aquarium that little kids are allowed to touch? I'll fight one of those sharks.
Sure. I'll fight a stingray. I could do that, right?
I killed Steve Irwin, man.
Yeah, but that's because Steve Irwin was an idiot. It's fine.
All right. This is enough spent on this topic, I think.
So... Before we go too far, I think that this moment is kind of highlighting a comment that we got on our website a couple weeks ago.
Really?
We got a comment from listener Julie. It was now about 2 weeks ago that Julie gave us this. But Julie starts out by saying, love your car guy vibe with a balance of the female voice. So sorry, Elise, you're not here today. About human factors when not wanting to be uncomfortable with the unknown. So I just think this really emphasizes our, quote, car guy vibe for any of you who are out there that are... former listeners of the Car Guy shows on NPR. Those were with Click and Clack, the Tappert brothers. I don't remember, but they're the guys, the Rusty's guys from Cars.
Click and Clack. Yeah, I was gonna say nobody's ever told me I have a Car Guy vibe on any level.
Right, like, so that's why I had to explain to you what the Car Guy vibe meant.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I do appreciate that. They're like, hey, you have like a Dungeons and Dragons vibe, not like a Car Guy vibe.
You know, you really seem like someone who knows about cars. That's what I think when I listen to Patrick. I think. This guy knows a thing about cars.
Yeah.
No one has ever had that thought.
Nobody. So I appreciate that. Who's that listener again?
Julie is her name.
Thank you, Julie.
Or at least is the name that was submitted on the website. You know, what do we know? We don't have any sort of identity verification on there.
Shout out to Julie. All right. Let's get on to our main story. School
let's do it.
Starting. So I have definitely seen...
School's back. before, never. Oh, sorry, we're not singing the song.
I've only seen on the Facebook, people are stressed out about school.
Yeah, more than usual. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, let's just be
honest. Already pretty stressful.
Back to school, always a stressful time, but things seem to be ramping up this year in a unique way, in a way that is not altogether unfounded.
Sure.
But I think it has some flaws, both in its thinking and in its reaction to others. I think we've got some problems here.
I agree. So here, school starting, let's see. I believe Montgomery County, the county that Lord of Life is in, is starting online. Is that correct?
Well, so, yeah.
Or is it blended?
So schools in, there are different districts within Montgomery County. And so there's the Conroe ISD, there's Tomball, there's Klein, there's Spring. Various portions of those fall within Montgomery County, and all of them make their own decisions. At this point, all of the major school districts around Lord of Life have now said we're starting on completely online. Your students will be staying at home. K through 12, everybody's online at the beginning of the school year. All of them have set dates in the beginning of September when they hope to have students in person again. But who knows?
Houston is the same way. The Houston ISD, so that's the larger city that Woodlands is kind of connected to,
north
the
of,
suburb
yeah.
of. That is also starting online. There are other suburbs in the Houston area that are not starting online, that are starting
currently.
In person.
Yep.
And I believe the private school in our area, we have a large non-religious private school, which is kind of interesting. They are starting in a blended format. So they're going some in person, some online. So this is stressful for a lot of parents. And if you're on Facebook and if you're on any comment section on any person talking about these things, you're going to know people are passionate.
Yes.
People.
Yeah. There seems to be no lukewarm on this issue.
There is not. And there definitely does not seem to be, I don't know, like a trust in the school systems or in their government to provide leadership on this. And maybe that's founded. You know, we can certainly say in Texas in coronavirus times, even our government leadership has been somewhat all over the place. Like if you're conservative, you think probably they've gone too far. If you're liberal, you think they haven't gone far enough, but nobody's happy with kind of the way things have gone here in Texas with our state government leadership. And so it's no surprise that when it comes down to schools, we're in the same boat. We both have kids, but we do not have school age kids. So Timmy is not, he's like a 15 months old, so he's not going to high school. He's not going to middle school or anything like that. He's pretty advanced.
I don't know what you're doing. William's already enrolled at,
And you have, Sophia is 4 or 5 at this point?
She will be 5 this fall. She's 4 right now. So she's still in pre-K. Yeah.
Okay. So
not yet in the larger public schools system.
Yeah. So we, even if our, the child care or schooling systems we'd be looking at are not governed by the state or the school boards are governed by individual entities. So we could say, I personally can empathize with the stress and anxiety about this, but without a kid in that process, I'm not as fully invested as somebody else. I can, just get that off the bat. I can say that's true.
And so, I'll agree with that too, right? I definitely have an opinion. I definitely have a lot of
thoughts.
For
sure, me too.
But don't have the same full emotional investment and concern as someone who has a kid in one or all of these grades that are impacted by this.
And the decisions of schools will not directly affect my family. Mm-hmm. They might indirectly, but not directly affect my family. So, so there, that's where we're at. So how do we want to discuss this? Because, maybe let's talk to this. There's a big contingent out there that's like, school should only be online, period, indefinitely. That's a big voice out there. I especially see that a lot from a lot of teachers, a lot of educators. And not to say all teachers are educators, but I think that's a big point of that. And part of that, school should be online only, is for the teachers, educators, staff.
Teacher and student safety.
Yes, it's part of that yep. process. So let's start there. So why, you know, what do we want to discuss kind of about that perspective?
Yeah, I think we want to hit two things here. I think we want to kind of hit what are the perspectives, yeah. and I think we want to hit what is it that is causing so much animus, I think is the best way to describe it, when these two perspectives meet. I think that's ultimately where I think as people of faith, we're not doing a good enough job of being compassionate to people who disagree with us. So let's yes. start with the disagreement and then look for a path towards compassion as people of faith, right? So yes. on the one side, you have teachers across the country and locally here in Texas who are saying, and parents too, let's not just say these are just teachers, but these are parents, teachers, educators across the board saying, look, we need to be remote because we don't have this virus under control. Mm-hmm. And sending kids into an environment in which they're in close quarters with other people who are doing whatever their families do on any given weekend, right? So it no longer matters how good of social distancing your own family is practicing. As soon as your child enters that building, they're now at the mercy of whatever social distancing practices every other family is or is not abiding by. And so there's yeah. a lot of risk for students. There's certainly more risk for educators and staff in the building who might be in these at-risk groups or who are going home to people who are at these risk groups, mm-hmm. right? So I'm a caregiver, you know, in my spare time when I'm not a teacher in this classroom, I'm going home to be a caregiver for my elderly parents, and they're at risk. And so I've been really careful, you know, this is not me, this is now speaking as someone.
Sure, sure.
I'm being really careful to make sure that I'm staying healthy, but if I'm forced to go back to work, I can't do that, and I can't protect my parents, and who's going to care for my parents? And I think those are legitimate concerns that we should be thinking about. We should be addressing how do we care for our teachers and our staff, because they are, in my opinion, and I am biased here, I'll just own this, right? Because I was raised by two public educators, mm-hmm. so I'm definitely biased to the side of teachers. Teachers are the lifeblood of our children's ability to thrive, right? Without a strong education system, you know, our entire system begins to fall apart. And we see that in places where mm-hmm. good schools are not available or not in place. Now, there are elements of that I think are risky, because what that side tends not to say out loud is an alternative to how to care for those kids, which mm-hmm. is where we are now, right? Now we're at a place where some of the schools locally are saying, oh, well, we're gonna go online. And so you have thousands of parents, even just in our era, thousands of parents who are two working home parents, where those parents need to be going to work.
Yes.
And now they have a, you know, first grader, second grader, fifth grader, even high schooler, right? Who is supposed to be at home on their computer for whatever the allotted amount of time is, and they now have to figure out childcare for this yeah. child. And there's no alternative being presented by those who said, at least what I'm seeing, right? You know, we're saying, oh, school should be closed, stay home, but we're not presenting an alternative of here's how we're going to care for these kids whose parents need to work to get by.
Yeah, let me jump in there, because yeah, I think absolutely. That this is the heart of the issue. I think both sides, yeah, to are speaking past one another in a sense. For one, if schools reopen, there's no plan. It's from that perspective, I've not seen any plan from any school to sort of like, well, what happens when kids test positive for coronavirus?
Sure.
What happens to that kid? What happens to that class? What happens to that teacher? And then what happens, you know, in high school, if kids are going from room to room and mm-hmm. one and, you know, 10 kids test positive in one high school, does every kid need to go self-quarantine now for 2 weeks? Like, there's not a plan of action there. And yet, you know, like, we have built a system in America on kids are in a classroom mm-hmm. For 9 months out of the year. And this is, for many families, not only benefiting the child for education, but it benefits the family system because it allows mom and dad to go to work, mm-hmm. you know? And so now I would hate to be in that stressful situation of like, does one of us have to quit our job or change our job to stay home with our child? And this is going to be difficult because I'm not a teacher and now I'm a homeschool teacher. You know, that's pretty difficult. Asking a 8-year-old to keep a mask on all day and to stay socially distanced from their friend is pretty, pretty difficult. Also asking them to learn on a computer mm-hmm. through a Zoom call is also pretty difficult. Like, these are just not what we, neither of those things are really what we in America have a core base for. Like, we don't know how to do this. We don't have, like, maybe, you know, 200 years ago when we were in, like, small one-room classrooms, and then, you know, kids were mostly learning from home, too. Like, that we could maybe survive it then, but now we just don't have that as yeah. part of our DNA. And so there is no good answer. We can say that right now. Like, there may be good answers for health and safety, but there's not. But that kind of ignores the childcare aspect of it, or mm-hmm. what do working families do? You know, regardless, some significant portion of our population is going to be hurt by the what we've provided so far, or what we have right now. Yeah.
And I think this is where it's so essential for our faith to be able to enter into the conversation, because yeah. it's at this point where we start to look at it and say, I can make a sound biblical theological argument for both.
Yeah.
I can make an argument that is rooted in compassion and love for my neighbor and the same love that Jesus Christ has for me. I could make an argument for both sides out of that position. And when we find ourselves in that place, when we find ourselves in a place of being aware that we could argue both sides from the place of faith, our faith really has to call us into another way of existing in that space. And I think that is where, that's where I am seeing people struggling the most, is not in the ability to make a decision one way or the other. I don't have a right answer to this. I don't have a solution. But I do see that we are not moving towards compassion as a people of God. We are not moving towards a space of recognizing this is a really hard decision for those who are in power, for those who are being affected by it. This is a really hard decision. And how do we have compassion to extend the love of Christ in the midst of that hard decision? And, you know, at one point, I saw this meme floating around on Facebook that was essentially, let's all start practicing this now. And it was a series of conversations. And so the first one was, I hear that you're going to homeschool your kids this fall. I know that was a really hard decision. I'm glad you were able to make it for you and your family. And then the next one was, I know you're planning to send your kids to school this fall. I know that was a really hard decision. I'm glad you were able to make it for you and your family. And the next one was, I hear you're going to do some sort of blended learning. That was a really hard decision. I'm glad you were able to make it for you and your family, right? Yeah. I think that's the kind of compassion that we need to be calling ourselves toward, because there is not a clear right answer to this. There is not one solution that's going to fit for everybody. And as churches and as people of faith, maybe we need to look to see what are gaps that we can be filling. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is something that we're having kind of tangential conversations around here at Lord of Life. I don't know that anything's going to be able to happen, but it's a conversation that we're kind of floating, is what does it mean for places to step up and provide space for kids to be supervised and to do their work for a couple days a week so that parents can work, so that parents mm-hmm. do have the ability. Because, you know, one of the things we pride ourselves on here at Lord of Life is being a place where people in the community can go to for assistance, right? We have a great discretionary fund that's available for us to use for rent assistance, for electric bills, things like that. You know, if these parents aren't able to go to work because they have to be home caring for their children or home supervising their kids, that need is only going to go up. And so how do we step in before that financial need arises and say, look, we have an opportunity to care for these kids in a meaningful way? How do we as people of faith enter into this space in a way other than I know what's right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that this ultimately is part of a larger symptom maybe in our world today of kind of this, like, a death of empathy for one another.
Yeah.
Like, one, all of us seem to have, like, an amazing amount of self-assurance in our own points of view.
Mm-hmm.
That, again, a year ago at this time, none of us thought, what would America look like with a worldwide pandemic? Or at least I wasn't thinking that. Maybe you were, I was not. Like, this was not on our radar of, like, how would this affect every aspect of our jobs, our lives, our schools, how we interact with one another. These were not on my radar. And so, since we're all now stumbled into this, there's so much assurance, though, that my point of view is the right one. Mm-hmm. And what I want is correct. And I think that some of this comes from, like, well, who are we listening to? I mean, if you're trying to say, like, well, since I don't know the answers, I want to listen to the experts, and what do they have to say? People at the CDC, people at the state or national level of governance, what are they saying are the right things? And there, what's frustrating and hard is they can't get on the same page. Mm-hmm. You know, are the CDC and the Center for Disease will say one thing that will be contradicted or kind of go around by, or worked around by state and national leaders, which is tough, right? Like, so all of us are kind of saying, like, in my mind, I've decided coronavirus is not a very big deal. Therefore, we should just go back to school. And some of us, some people are saying, in my mind, I've decided coronavirus is a very, very big deal. Therefore, we can't go back to school. But what we're lacking here, I think, is that empathy for parents in the midst of this who are having to make a tough decision for their family.
Yeah.
And so that needs to be, I think, at the forefront of our thinking and conversation of, like, this is really hard. Like, social distancing, trying to flatten the curve, to weather the storm is really hard. And it's really hard for some families to say, like, we're taking this unbelievably seriously, and they go to Facebook and they see their friends not take it seriously. That's a really hard place to be.
And we've probably all been in that place before, right? I mean, I remember being the kid who, you know, wasn't allowed to, I'm going to throw out a metaphor. I was the kid who wasn't allowed to use the skateboard unless I had my helmet and my wristbands and my knee guards and all this stuff on. And my friends could just go around and skateboard up and down the driveway and do whatever they wanted. And I'm out there looking, you know, safe, but looking like a little, you know,
like a nerd.
Yeah. Looking like a little nerd. And so we have all had this experience of some point or another where we are forced into making a decision, and then we look out and see other people doing what we wish we could do and feeling like we couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a mentor say to me once, if you're constantly holding people to your expectations for yourself, you will always be disappointed. And I think there's some truth to that, that, you know, I know what my family and I are doing for ourselves and for others, because I know my role here at the church. I know the risk that my role naturally engages in having to see people and having to be a part of that. And I know that in order to do my job here, I need to be healthy. And so I know that we are really trying to mitigate risk elsewhere. And I know that our family, I don't want to say suffers, but I know that my family bears the brunt of that, of what we're having to do for that. I also look at people's, you know, pictures or Facebooks or see this. I'm like, oh man, that'd be great, right? It'd be awesome if we could go do that instead, or, you know, pretend like this didn't exist and not care. That's just not, it's not who I am. And we are all wrestling with that. I don't think that we can stress this enough. Like, whether they agree with your position or not, they are wrestling with the pandemic in the same way you are. They are coping with this in a different way, but they're trying to cope with this new reality that we are all trying to figure out. And there are going to be times when we agree with it or disagree with it, but that does not define anybody. Your one choice to make this, to take this path or that path, or to go to school or not go to school, does not define you as a human being. And we should not allow our reaction to it to be the thing that defines us either. We should be looking for a greater reaction than just what our instinct tells us.
Yeah. So I think for me, what I am trying to do, and I hope that, I want to see, more of in my spheres of influence and where I'm watching social media, is like, in the midst of something that's the unknown, it's unknown what this fall is going to look like for parents and students. It's unknown when coronavirus is over. Mm-hmm. It's unknown when life goes back to normal, if there is a normal, if it ever goes back. In the midst of that unknown, this is the time where I'd say, like, the lessons and teachings of Jesus that I would like to think my life has been built on carry me through them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that this is the time where compassion, empathy, and understanding, things that are central to my faith, guide my life right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean you know, like saying, like, well, I have faith in Jesus, so I'm not afraid, and I can just go out without a mask and go get sick, and it's not going to bother myself. I mean, like, I wear a seatbelt, I have health insurance and car insurance and house insurance, not because I'm afraid of any of those things, but it's just the smartest possible way to, or it's, from my opinion, the smartest possible way to navigate life.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens when I interact with somebody on Facebook who is saying, well, I don't want to wear a mask, it's stupid, and it hurt, I can't breathe. Or I want schools to open up immediately, and like, if kids get sick, they'll just have to get over it. Like, that is when I think the teachings of Jesus need to guide my voice mm-hmm. the most. Because, like, that's what I'm hopeful my life has been built on.
Yeah.
To kind of carry me through these frustrating and tough times, if that makes sense.
No, I think that does. I think that, I think that relying on the teachings of Jesus, relying on the training that we've been brought up with, that spiritual food that we've been fed throughout the years, this is where all that training pays off, right? It's like someone going to the Super Bowl, right? They don't go to the Super Bowl and start training the week before.
Mm-hmm.
They have been training for years to get to that point, so that when that Super Bowl happens, they are at their peak performance, and they're not going out there and thinking to themselves, okay, what route do I have to run now? Okay, I have to go 10 steps, and then do I go left or do I... No, they've made it muscle memory so that they get out onto that field and they are able to perform at their best because of the years of training that have gone into that. And if we've been training up to this point, we should be able to rely on the compassion of Jesus to be our muscle memory, to enter into those phases and say, I don't have to worry about how I'm going to react because I trust... I trust Jesus to be guiding my reaction in the midst of these conversations. I trust the training, if we want to call it that. I trust the training and the formation that I've had. And I think that's what you're really emphasizing, is that we want to fall back on what would Jesus do, right? Let's lift up the cliche at this point. What would Jesus do in this moment? Yeah. And I don't know that Jesus would send his kids or not send his kids. Jesus wouldn't have had kids. But I don't know what Jesus would tell you to do with your children. But I do know that Jesus would tell you to act with love and compassion for your neighbor. I do know that Jesus would tell you to welcome in those who disagree with you. I do know that Jesus would tell you to eat with the sick and heal the broken and you know, welcome the sinner and the tax collector. I do know those things. And I think that's where we need to fall back to. How are we continuing to do those things in the midst of this? And how is our reaction to other things reflecting that training?
Yeah, I think, you know, in many, many ways, I think what we're saying is obviously easier said than done. But
whatever, this is a piece of cake. Just wear the bracelet and then you know, and it's done, right? Isn't that what we learned from the 90s? You just put on a bracelet and WWJD.
That's how we knew that. In the late 90s, the world just got fixed, and then we took off the bracelet and things went back to
that's right.
To pot. But I like that analogy of, like, we've been training our whole lives, you know, for the Super Bowl, all these things. And maybe if it's, like, really, really hard right now, maybe we weren't really training that hard. You know, like, mm-hmm. maybe this is the magnifying glass of, like, maybe I only took Jesus seriously when it was easy. And now that it's hard, I don't know how to use the teachings of Jesus to guide me.
Mm-hmm.
Or now that I'm stressed, I don't know how to use the teachings of God to guide me. I think C.S. Lewis kind of does this, I think, a really neat analogy of, like, if there's, like, cockroaches in your house and you kind of, which in Houston is probably more likely than not.
Mm.
But if you, like, open the door and, like, make a bunch of noise and say, like, hi, cockroaches, is anybody here? And then turn on the lights, they've all scattered and they're all hiding. But if you fling open the door and flick on the lights, that's your best bet to, like, see them in the light for where they are. Does that make sense?
I mean, I understand the reference to cockroaches. I'm not sure where we're going with this.
But his analogy is, many times in our life, we've given our those negative emotions, those things that have taken root in our lives, a chance to hide. But the coronavirus and now school opening are these stressful times. The light has been thrown on immediately, and we did not get a chance to, in some words, put our church face on or put on our put that on. We're just exposed. So all the cockroaches that have always been there,
yeah,
are now shown. Or, you know, now it's like, oh, look at these things. Look at how I think about my neighbor. Look at how it's so easy for me to get so mad. Or look at how I go on social media or on websites to find people to disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that were always there, only I had time to hide them because I wasn't living in a global pandemic.
Yeah.
And now I am.
Yeah.
And things got shifted. So, you know, I think that in some ways that could be a good thing, because now we're like, because now I'm aware. I'm mm-hmm. aware mm-hmm. how easy it is for me to judge my neighbor. I just am.
Yeah.
Like, and so it was easy to pretend that I could get over it or I wasn't that way, but now it's not. And so that means there's spiritual and soul work for me to do personally, and maybe for those of my Facebook friends who I see arguing with one another, they might be in the same place. I'm yeah. hopeful that they land on the, this was too easy to jump into. There's a soul issue for me going on.
Yeah. 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 So I wasn't sure where you were going with that, but I like that analogy. I like where that ended up. That was nice.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Oh. It was kind of a meandering trail through the cockroach, but then it came out to a place of like, oh, okay, I'm with you now. I get that.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
that's helpful. Yeah. I think just, you know, compassion, right? I think that's what we want for ourselves.
Yeah.
At our core, I think we want people to treat us with compassion, and so why wouldn't we extend the same to others? And yeah, I think the Christian faith, all of us as individuals and as a body of Christ, I think this pandemic is bringing a lot of cockroaches to light.
Yeah.
Not just for individuals, but for the church as a whole. And I think this is a good time for us to deal with those.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus says multiple times, there's going to be stuff that's going to die. There's going to be things that are thrown into fire. There's going to be things that have to be cleaned away. And that's how the fruit grows, right? The only way to grow mm-hmm. the fruit is to prune the tree, to prune the vine. And there are probably a lot of things that as individuals and as a church body, we need to have pruned away. And sometimes we're thrust into that. I saw one thing the other day talking about declining church attendance, and they're like, you know, a lot of churches are struggling right now with church attendance, and they're seeing what was initially like this huge boost and like, oh, look at this, I have 5,000 Facebook views on my worship service, and now they're like down to 250 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, the pandemic didn't cause people to stop going to church, but maybe the pandemic escalated what was already a process that was in place, right? So mm-hmm. maybe we got here faster than we would have otherwise, but now it's sure. forced us to, like you said, it's forced us to turn on the lights and look at things in a different light. And I think we're in the same place in our lives, that this did not take us anywhere we were not going to go. Eventually, you were going to have to deal with the fact that you were not as compassionate as you thought you were, that you were not as mm-hmm. loving towards your neighbor as you thought you were. This just got us there faster. This yeah. just said, you know, hey, now you're in the Super Bowl and you gotta figure out what that is.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I think that's a good place for us to stop, unless you have anything more. I don't have anything more to say, I think.
I mean, I could talk about compassion for a long time, so...
Sure.
Occupational hazard, I could do that. Yeah. But we'll call it there. I think at this point, we'll just say, hey, if you liked what you heard today, or frankly, if you didn't, if you think we're, you know, full of it and need to be put in our place, that's fine too. Let us know. Reach out. We would love to continue this conversation with you, hear what you and your family are struggling with or wrestling with. How can we help you be more like Jesus in your life going forward? Because we really, you know, we call this Beyond Sunday because we want that to be a serious thing, especially in this world where we haven't met together on a Sunday in months. We want to find very serious ways to take our faith out into the world and to practice those things. So reach out to us. You can find us at beyondsundaypodcast.com. You can find this episode and all 96 of our episodes. Ooh. Patrick, we're creeping up on the 100. All 96 of our episodes are available wherever delightfully car guy-like podcasts are available for your
sure.
Listening consumption.
Let us know if you have any car questions. We're here.
Absolutely. I will call AAA and get you an answer to that question.
Sure. Yeah. All the car questions. Carburetors.
Do you even know what a carburetor is?
It does some stuff. I don't know.
Carbohydrates. I can answer. I can do a lot of talk about carbohydrates. I got those.
Yeah, I'm trying to cut back on my carburetors right now.
I'm cutting back my carburetors. My carburetors go straight to my thighs. That's my problem.
That happens. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more